The Fan on Demand. He clinched first place in his division about 20 years ago, and he has never looked back. Bob McCowan, Primetime Sports, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Still Thursday, April 24th, 2014, Primetime Sports, Canada's most listened to sports talk show on the radio, on your television, on the Sportsnet family and networks. Bob McCowan, the coach, Butch Carter, in our Toronto studios. Baseball being Betty Good to me, Bob Elliott will join us a little bit later on. But first, hockey, Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. So, hello, Heels, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
I'm good. As a former goaltender and a member of the... of the club, to what do you attribute the extraordinarily poor performances in general by all goaltenders in the Stanley Cup playoffs to?
You're not happy with any of them, Bobcat?
It's not a whole lot of them that I'm really happy with, to tell you the honest to goodness truth. I mean, there's been the odd guy, but clearly you don't have a response to that question, at least not an intelligent one.
I've watched it, some of it live, and some of it I've watched from the studio, and yeah, you're correct. You know, you look last night at the performance of Fleury, and I covered a series with Tampa Bay where you had, you know, Carey Price, who was decent other than game one, but Lindback, who looked to me like he was playing net with an oven mitt and tweezers as he was trying to catch the puck. I mean, it was almost laughable. There's some fatal flaws in some of the goalies. It's a lot of pressure. There's a lot with not a lot of experience, and there's, I guess, a lot of different reasons why it's been lousy, but good for the fans. I mean, we're not getting to the edge of our seats. We're getting out of our seats because of all the goals.
Yep. All right, so let's get to the specifics of it. Fleury aside, I don't know what you do there. Jonathan Quick acknowledged as one of the, okay, let me go down this road. How about top three goaltenders in the NHL right now? You okay with that?
I'm okay with that, yep.
All right. I'm not going to say he's the best. I'm going to say top three goaltenders in the NHL right now. Would you put him back in the net for game four?
Oh, yeah.
See,
yeah.
That's what's wrong with hockey people. See, you would do that. His ass would be glued to the bench if it was my call.
Ask Butch. I mean, it would be career suicide to the coach to take a star player in an elimination game and tell him, you just sit and watch. I'm going to play the backup.
If there's one,
Butch looks like he's got hemorrhoids over here.
If there's one thing that I know,
yeah,
try not to create a controversy.
Yeah. Yeah. Butch, there was a coach one time. Who
How'd that work for you?
That's so good. Not to have Wayne Gretzky take a shootout in the Olympics.
Right.
So he's not coaching anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, how'd that work out for him?
We filled in the blanks, and we didn't win a medal, so... No, you know, I think you have to look at the game that the LA Kings have played. And, again, they've got fatal flaws in what they're doing as they manage the puck. Most of the goals that San Jose are scoring are off of the rush. And Jonathan Quick's a guy who establishes really aggressive position off of rush chances. And so they figured him out, where you go east-west with a quick play, and it's to the back of the net. And if you hold on to it, Quick will get there. If you shoot it right away, chances are he doesn't get there. So it's Jonathan Quick who gave up 13 goals in two games, but the team has played lousy as well. They've got to take some on their shoulders.
Oh, I get that. I mean, it's never one guy, really. You know, we're not talking about a whole whack of soft goals, but we are still talking about a lot of biscuits in the basket. And one of the things you can do is change the culture, change the tone. You know, are the LA Kings a good enough hockey team to come back from three down? They probably are a good enough hockey team to do it. I say right now, Quick isn't playing well. Give the kid a shot. Put the kid in there and let's see what he can do. But there's this reluctance to do this in professional sports.
Heels, will you please tell him that you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater?
Yeah, you do sometimes, you know. Sometimes the reason the bathwater needs changing is because the baby messed it up. So get rid of them both.
You know why there's a reluctance of hockey people to do this, Bobcat?
Yeah, job security. And because they don't want to look stupid.
And it doesn't work. That's why.
Well, cite the case.
Tell him, Heels.
I look at San Jose and I say they are a better team. They have four lines that are scoring. Lines three and four have been exceptional. They're not Joe Thornton's team anymore. They're Joe Thornton's team plus little Joe Pavelski's team plus lines three and four that are drilling the LA Kings. And so times have changed since the Kings won the Cup, and they're not a good enough team to beat San Jose.
Well, they sure don't look like it. I'll give you that much. All right, let's change gears a little bit. You're sitting here talking to a couple of Buckeyes, and I don't know about Butch, but I've never felt any kind of affinity for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Agreed.
It just never meant that much to me. They're an Ohio team. It's the only Ohio team in the National Hockey League. I'm a Columbus boy. I'm a Buckeye fan. The Columbus Blue Jackets, there they are. And, of course, they had that idiot McLean running them for so long, I couldn't possibly cheer for them back then. And now you look at this team and you see something that is actually likable about this team. Whether they prevail in this series or go on to any kind of success this year, I'm not saying that. They've already done enough for me to say, you know, good for them. Finally, this team, I think, has climbed the mountain. They're not at the peak, but they got over that. They've already got over a hump. Your assessment of their performance so far?
Well, it's so ironic that the football team is in, the hockey team's in a football town, because it is football on ice for them with no out of bounds. When I watched them play against Pittsburgh, they are a big team that plays the body, and the size mismatch is incredible. And it's wearing down the Pittsburgh Penguins. In a lot of ways, they're a team that took a while to build because of that, what did you call them, the idiot Mac who ran the team and didn't draft well? Well,
yeah.
They're drafting well now. They've got a plethora of young defensemen that are in the minors. They've got guys that are coming up and playing at the National Hockey League level and showing us what they're all about. And you're right, we don't watch them play a lot. They're not on every Saturday night like the Leafs. But you see them up close, and they're taking this Pittsburgh Penguins team and showing them, you know, a little bit about what it's like to play that Columbus-style hockey. I don't think Pittsburgh likes it. I mean, this is a series where it's the wackiest series. I mean, every game been up either 3-0 or 3-1. I mean, those leads are insurmountable unless it's the Leafs. Here we sit every game. It's like, don't turn away. Don't get a beer now, because you never know what's going to change here. But it's been a wacky series.
Heels, the two Pittsburgh Stars have not scored a goal in last 9 playoff games. What is going on there?
Well, I think some of it has to do with who they played. And, you know, you looked last year at that Boston series, and I don't know, for whatever reason, Crosby thought he would take off the jaw protection and he was healthy again. And the first thing Chara did was punch him in the jaw. It kind of hurts when a guy 6'9" punches you in the jaw. So, he, that's a really good defensive team, a tough team to play against with their matchups. So he gets on the schneid there, and it carries through to a Columbus team that has a guy by the name of Jack Johnson, who's, again, a football player on skates, who's a real big guy who isn't going to back down from anybody and really has come alive in this series. So, you know, they've got some guys that are willing to pay the price. And up front, a guy like, Dubinsky, who they traded for, you know, more hits than anyone in the series. And he hasn't just hit Crosby. He's hitting everybody. This is, you know, all hands on deck with everyone. And they've got guys like R.J. Umberger who will block a shot with his face. I mean, it's a complete team. And so I think it's these two matchups that have led to these numbers being so egregious.
Everybody talks about Bylsma being on the griddle here if he doesn't. I mean, I don't know where the bar is for him in terms of keeping his job, where do you think it is? What does he have to accomplish? I mean, clearly, going out in the first round isn't going to help his case. But how far do you think this Pittsburgh team has to go for Bylsma to feel secure about his future?
Well, I think you've got to look at the history, and he was on the hot seat last year. And there was rumors last year that he was going to find himself with the music stopped and no chair for him to sit in. So it's there. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, some of the exit interviews that will happen with the players if the team loses early. You know, has he lost to Crosby? You know, Crosby, to me, in this series, you know, we showed a little clip last night that was kind of neat. We showed him in the Olympics where he got a breakaway and he was skating up the ice at about 38 kilometers an hour. We showed a clip from last night where empty net, he's chasing the puck down with a guy who's way quicker than. He's at 30 kilometers an hour, and it took him 200 feet to get to that speed. We showed a game in, when he first came back where it took him five strides to get to 31 kilometers an hour. So something's not right with him, and the fact he played 18 minutes last night tells me it's really not right. So, you know, there's a lot that happens on the inside that we don't know, and maybe he's banged up. And maybe they just attribute it to the fact that the team's banged up. They have a lot of players that went to the Olympics. And the Olympics was a long ways away and a lot of hockey in a short period of time. Columbus didn't have a lot of players that went to the Olympics. Not good enough to send a lot of their best. But the Penguins, this has been a long year, and they've got a lot of players that play a lot of hockey. So I guess all of that put together says internally there's got to be some issues going on.
And Fleury's not good enough to save him right now.
No.
Fleury hasn't been good enough to save anybody for the last 3 years in the playoffs. I mean,
they turned to a 50-year-old last year to see if they could get it done. And he was 40, but he had the body of a 50-year-old. Kind of had my body. But and again, when you go to those measures, you know, I mean, they work with Fleury all year to try to sports psychologists. But clearly this guy has a major speed bump when it comes to the brain and then how I perform on the ice.
St. Louis and Chicago back to square one. Is there a better team in this series? Or is this as the numbers would suggest, a completely evenly matched series between two teams, and you're probably going to have to flip a coin in game seven to figure out who's better?
Well, you know, if you look at the numbers for the series, you say, yeah, hey, look, it's pretty tight. Except Chicago should have won game one.
Mm-hmm.
They're up with a minute left to go, and they gave up a lead and then decided to play two games in one day. They had game two won and done and decided that they were going to go and commit as many felonies in the last 9 minutes of the game as they could. So the series could be over. They could have won the series four straight. That being said, that's why you play the games, and they haven't. But they're the champs, and they aren't going to go down easy, and we saw it last night. And so St. Louis, I know over the next couple of days, it's going to be, here we go again. We did this last year. We got up 2-0, and we blew it. And there's a lot of guys in that room. That seed of doubt is going to grow if Chicago gets off to a good start in the next game.
We talked about coaches being on the griddle if they lose. Is Hitch on the griddle if St. Louis goes out in round one?
Impatient ownership, and Butch would know about impatient ownership. When they decide that they want results and they make a big trade like a Ryan Miller and they give up a bunch of, you know, top guys to get them and you rent them for a couple weeks, then, yeah, you could have a change there. You know, we talked at the end of the year, there's going to be carnage in a lot of spots. We're just waiting for kind of the first domino to fall. But, you know, impatient ownership that makes a bold move, and it's new ownership, so it's not like the old guys who just said, ho-hum, we don't care if we ever win. These new guys want to win.
We haven't had you on since the Habs swept Tampa Bay aside. Your general thoughts on that performance by the Montreal Canadiens. Was this a Tampa Bay team that without their number one goaltender couldn't beat anybody? A young team not ready for prime time? Or did you see something in the Canadiens that leads you to believe they have a legitimate shot at, I don't know, getting to the Stanley Cup final?
Well, I'll take you back to the Leaf game against Tampa Bay. I was sitting with a buddy. We were watching the game. We just opened our first beer, and the talk was, okay, who can win between Montreal and Tampa Bay? I immediately said, Tampa Bay's got a really good 100-plus point team. I think they're the better team. And within 3 seconds, Bishop went down, and I changed my answer to, no, Montreal is going to win the series. And strictly because you can't win if you don't have goaltending. And, you know, when you don't have that goaltending, and you've got 11 rookies in the lineup, and you've got some stars that are banged up, Palat was banged up, Gudas at the end was banged up, who's a defenseman, who's pretty rough and rugged. And then, of course, Stamkos is not 100%. That leg is not healed to his liking. It's going to get there by the beginning of next year, but he's not there yet. So, you know, having your team have to score 4 goals every night to win, and Carey Price is the goalie you got to score them on, good luck. You don't stand a chance. But I really like what I see in Montreal. I like the fact they get along, which, you know, some teams, you know, they win because they're talented, but they can't stand each other. This isn't that kind of team. They like each other, and I've seen it now for a couple weeks down the season. So I think they can do some damage. Great goaltending, solid defense, and they have 4 lines that can score. That's a good combination.
Can they get past Boston, assuming that's what's on the horizon?
Well, I'll take you back to the Islander team that I played on in 93. Just a bunch of young guys that were too stupid to even know that we were playing the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they were a dynasty and had won 2 Stanley Cups. But we really liked each other, and we had a good coach in Al Arbor, and we beat Pittsburgh. We had no right beating Pittsburgh. Now, this Boston team isn't Pittsburgh. They're not a dynasty team like that was with Lemieux and the entire group that was so, so good. So anything can happen in a 2-week war. So, I think the Montreal Canadiens could beat the Boston Bruins.
And the way the scenario sets up, Montreal will be as rested as you can be going into the next series, which gives
them
and give them a better chance.
Well,
you know, I don't think Price is 100% yet. You know, you watch every single time there's a whistle, he goes down on one knee. I didn't see that from him in the past, but you know, since Soshi and the time he took off, he's doing that now. The 10 or 11 days is really going to help him. And the break he had after Soshi, look at his numbers. It's really helped him. So you're right, Butch. Good point.
We got to get out of here. Enjoy tonight's action and the 6 months of playoffs still to come. Thank you, Heels, as always. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You didn't ask me about Rogers.
Oh, yeah. How are things going? Any news?
I called the receptionist and they hung up on me. So I'm going to try again on Monday and see if I get a result.
So if this broadcast thing doesn't work out, I mean, have you got another option? Because I know you haven't saved enough money. I mean, you're going to be a professional bagpipe player, or what's the deal?
I'm going to stand right there on Front Street, right underneath Scott Moore's office.
Yeah.
And play my bagpipes till he hires me.
Make sure you got a hat on the ground. You might as well make a few bucks while you're doing it.
Hey, Heels. Will you make sure there's enough room for both of us?
I'll be your agent.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
All right.
See you, Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. Well, what's your skill set other than coaching basketball? What do you got? I mean, you know.
I make a really good second.
Another rough start by a starting pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. And, boy, I mean, they got one guy going and like a house of fire, and the rest of them can't get this thing to the seventh inning most of the time. Here's our friend Bob Elliott of the Toronto Sun. Hello, Elliott.
Hello, Robert. Hello, Coach.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm excellent. But you have to admire him. His neck was clean.
Well, they didn't find anything anyway.
No.
Pine tar on the neck. Was there a better place to put the pine tar?
Yeah, there might have been about 800 or 900 places better.
But they must not have televisions in his home country because he didn't understand high def.
Well, the thing is, after, you know, it was such an issue 5 days before. I mean, but I, you know, it's we're having fun, and he's a good kid apparently. But I blame the Yankees. You know, the whether it's like Cashman last night said, this is our responsibility. It's either this has got to fall on the manager, the pitching coach, or somebody's got to say, hey, you're a rocket, don't do that. You know, I guess he went down the tunnel after the first inning and administered it there, so nobody saw it, and then just ran out to the mound. But
the ESPN cameras allegedly caught a conversation in the tunnel with the pitching coach and the trainer. So it's hard for me to believe that
before or afterwards.
During.
Oh, like, okay.
You know, before he was ejected. So it's hard for me to believe that they weren't complicit in this. Now, I don't want to point fingers, you know, unnecessarily, but it sure looks that way.
He just pointed 10 of them.
Well, yeah. Well. I mean, it doesn't look like he did it on his own and didn't tell anybody, but what do I know? Any event, he'll get whacked. He'll miss one start, I assume, huh? He'll get a six-gamer.
Ten games, which translates to when they rejig the rotation, when they fix it, move it around, he'll start the 11th game. And I think they've got a day off in there, too. So it's 10 days. It's not games.
Right. Is there a better way to do it for pitchers?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they gave Johnny Peralta their... Oh, 3-4 years ago, they gave him 8 games. He was a reliever, so they figure, you know, Tampa was upset. They figure it cost him 3 or 4 outings. I mean, yeah, I think 12 would have been a better number. And, you know, they have to play. The Yankees are with 24 guys, like, tonight and the rest of the way until this is over. But so, you know, if they get an extra inning game, they're in a mess. They're short. But the thing is, when you only make it 10 and they can juggle things around and say, okay, well, you start tomorrow and then you go on short rest or whatever. The guy's really only missing one start, and that really for the crime what he committed, it should be more than one start, I think.
Let's get back to the Blue Jays. I don't know what the point is when we should all be starting to make analysis or judgments on the Dustin McGowan experiment. And I think it is an experiment, him starting at this point in his career, all things considered. I've been rooting for him. I've had a level of optimism. And yet, again, last night, the wheels come off the kitty car with when you're given a 6-1 lead and he doesn't make it through the fifth inning. Where's the bar? At what point do you have to decide whether to keep going with Dustin or give up the ghost?
Well, he said something very telling there last night, Robert. He said once he hits, I know he went 4 innings plus, but the one inning was a 4-pitch inning, which is almost like not even warming up, right?
Yep.
So he said, after I get past 60 pitches, I lose my oomph or I lose my velocity or whatever. But this is a guy, you know, this wasn't anything that anybody noticed. He volunteered this. So, I mean, maybe one more or whatever. I mean, maybe you can put him in the bullpen and then I guess you have to, unless they make a move, you would have to go to Hap, I would guess.
Eek. Have you seen anything from Hap that suggests he'll be any better? I haven't.
No. He's too many 3-2 counts, which has been his sort of modus operandi, both with the Phillies and here when he had the chance. Yeah.
Well,
he's had a few good games. He had a scoreless outing, a combined shutout against the Red Sox last year, that first homestand. But McGowan, as we all know, at the start of spring training, wasn't their ideal choice. You know, they had Drabek as a possibility. They discussed Romero. They discussed Hap. Hap got hurt with the back. He was like number 9 or number 10 or wherever on their pecking order.
It really puts Gibby in a tough spot because
I agree.
I thought they had a really good spring training.
Yeah.
I think they worked on all the stuff. Everybody got their reps in. I think Gibby grew out of his experience from his first spring training back. But right now, he just doesn't seem like he has half the arms that he needs to because they can hit the cover off of baseball. So they should be able to score enough runs if they can get some support
Yeah, Encarnacion, he finally hit one the other night, and Lurie looks a little bit better, even though his hands are still moving all over the place. But you're right. When you pitching is so much the 80 or 90% or 120% of the game, as Yogi Berra would say, but Givens doesn't have the bullets to fire at the opposing. And these guys coming in on the weekend, they got some bullets.
Well,
and Peavy and Buchholz, I guess.
Yeah, well, the Bostons are in this weekend, mm-hmm. although they're not off to a great start. Nonetheless, we all do know that they have lots of talent over there. So what do you do? You're pretty much stuck with trying to let Dickey fight his way through whatever it is he's going through. Hutchison has been, in my opinion, he's been okay.
Hutchison been fine. He had a bad second one, his first start at home. Dickey was all right the other night. The ball, that little bloop into left field fell between Cabrera. Thought Reyes was going to catch it. Alphonse Gaston, the ball falls. And then, that's when Joe Morgan always told the story about making an error. And then he made another error, and then he made another error, and he went to the mound, and he went up to Larry Durker as a rookie with the Houston Astros, and he put his hand on his shoulder, and he says, "Look, you're the only guy who can get us out of this." And as a rookie, that's showing something, right? So anyways, Durker strikes out the next guy, and Morgan turned what he calls the best double play ever, a 4-6-3 to get out of it. So, Dickey, instead, when that ball fell in, he gave up a base hit and then a home run. But then the same thing happened to Gonzalez. The Baltimore second baseman had a clank, and then there was a base hit, and then Encarnacion hit the home run. So the starters mirrored each other, for not picking their guy up. Because mistakes are going to happen. It's not a game of perfection.
The bullpen started off the year like it was last year. As efficient as you could possibly be, almost top to bottom. And now we've seen some chinks in that armor, too, the last little while. What do you think that means?
Well, I think that's a fear. If these guys keep going four innings, the starter's supposed to work six, right?
Or more.
The starters are supposed to work more than the relievers. Well, that road trip, the Minnesota Cleveland portion of it, they I think there was an inning and a third difference that the starters worked more than the relievers. Well, that's not enough. Eventually, that's going to break down. And as we remember last year, Cecil got hurt, Delabar got hurt last year. I think the only one rough outing, Loop had a bad one in Cleveland, mm-hmm. but he's pitched very well.
One of the things that is concerning too is the rapidity with which the pitch count is getting up there with these starting pitchers. Are they too fine? Are they trying to be too fine? Are they throwing too many breaking balls, not enough fastballs? Is there anything in that we can watch for?
Well, that's a good point, Robert. I know I was talking on Minnesota radio. I know I didn't have signed sealed permission to go on, but their complaint there was about the umpires this year. And the zone has shrunk so much that their complaint there was that these guys are just missing, and it's ball. And whereas other years, and I said, well, it's the Quest Tech generation of umpires. And he said, no. He said, it's even smaller than that. So I don't know. I don't think you can't go through life blaming the umpires. You got to throw strikes.
Well, I'm not blaming the umpires. You understand?
No.
What I'm
saying, Minnesota was.
And if you sit and watch, on television and you look at the little box thing there, there's the odd one that you get a call that on an outside pitch that's a couple inches off the plate, and then maybe they miss one here or there. I don't think my complaint isn't about necessarily the inconsistency of the umpiring. Blue Jay pitchers are throwing too many balls. We're talking about guys missing the target, not by inches for the most part, but by a good margin. And we're seeing guys, I always subscribe to the theory, I don't know about you, that if you're a pitcher and you've got a half-assed decent fastball, give it to them in the early innings, one after another, until they prove to you that they can hit it.
Exactly.
And then start bringing the other pitches in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And worse, I'm seeing guys throwing 60 to 65% breaking balls in the first inning and missing with it. And then all of a sudden, the next thing you look, it's the fourth inning, and the guy's pitch count is at 75.
Yeah.
So we've had guys, the Blue Jays have had guys who haven't been able to finish, go as deep as you want because their performance has not dictated that. But we've also seen guys that Gibby had to yank out because the pitch count was getting too high.
Exactly.
So
yeah, like where would this team be without Burley, who's as he says, humps it up to 83 miles per hour, you know?
Max.
With the wind.
Yeah, downhill.
Let me throw this little piece in there. First of all, it starts with your number one starter. So he's not a strike pitcher anyway.
Well, he's got that funny thing. You don't know what it's going. He don't know where it's going.
But his ratio year to year is dropped, correct? But he's a knuckleball pitcher, right? So he's your number one starter, and he's struggling. I also think the umpires, both pitchers have to throw the same umpire. So
right,
that's an equalizer.
Yeah, I think you're right for the most part.
I worry about the Blue Jays in bad weather. The Minnesota game was ridiculous as far as weather-wise. You know, they're shoveling snow.
Well, why should the Minnesota players be better at that than Toronto players?
Well, because I think they play in a dome here.
Thank you.
Like it used to be, Robert, your day announcing at Exhibition Stadium, the Blue Jays were like the Buffalo Bills. You know, they'd show up in the cutoffs, right? And they'd play somebody from the south, and hey, this is April and September. This is a piece of cake. But I think this team it's become babied by the dome. That's probably something to that. Here and everything, and it can't handle it. I remember they went to Detroit early last year. It was awful weather.
Yeah,
I mean they were terrible.
Morrow got clocked in that series, if I remember correctly, too.
Yeah, Johnson too.
Yeah. Well, Johnson couldn't. You know, he couldn't strike out a little league team.
That's a good point.
Then they went to Kansas City after Detroit, and that's when the whole thing fell apart.
Well. Yeah, well, probably in spring training is when it fell apart.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's some truth to that. I thought that really one of the worst things I'd seen was when in that cold weather in Minnesota when the Blue Jay players all showed up in balaclavas and scarves and toques and earmuffs and long underwear and, you know, I mean, I think Bautista would have worn a Canada Goose jacket out there if they'd have let him. To play in the outfield. I mean, I don't know about you. I wouldn't let my players go out like that. I get that it's cold. You know what? Be a man. Suck it up.
So tell him what kind of players he'd have.
Robert, I've seen lots of guys wearing those balaclavas on the other highlights of games.
Get rid of those things. Be a man. Suck it up. I don't care if you grew up in the Dominican where it's never below 70 degrees. Too bad.
Our pitching's just got to come around, especially our relief pitching, because they are hitting the baseball when they hit it, and they haven't reached their groove. They're better than they were at the start of last year, without a doubt.
Yeah,
you know, the disappointing – I mean, look, the team is in second place. It's a game out of first place. They're a game over 500.
Which is a surprise. Not to me.
I picked 91 wins. So they're doing about what I would have hoped. The disappointing thing is that they've had multiple opportunities to be the number one team in the East, to take advantage of situations. They've had at least three or four games that they coulda, shoulda, woulda won.
They should have won the game in Cleveland. They should have won the game in Minnesota. What else?
You shouldn't have coughed up a 6-1 lead. You know, that's like having a 12-length lead, you know, coming down the stretch in a horse race, and your horse goes, I can't go anymore. You know, that ain't supposed to happen. Suck it up. So,
well, maybe he was checking the tote board on the infield.
Well, I know I would have been. and it's nobody's fault, necessarily. It's part of it. You know, you win some, you lose some, and some get rained out, I think, is...
Well, I mean,
how that works.
You know what the hitters are saying. Hey, you want me to hit the ball or pitch the ball?
Well, I mean, You know, but there's been opportunities there for this team to, you know, really get in a run, really get in a groove.
No question.
And they haven't been able to close the deal. And that, you know, one or two of those, totally understandable. 162 games, you're going to have those nights. You're going to have nights where you're going to get your doors beat in, no matter how good you are. The best teams in baseball, you look at, they're going to have at least one or two nights a year where they're just going to get tattooed. That happens. Blue Jays have been tattooed, I think, once, but they've had opportunities that they've coughed up. And I worry about the fragility of this team coming off last year and needing to feel good about themselves and needing to feel confident and not doing the, uh-oh, I wonder if this is all going to fall apart again.
Can I ask?
Well, you're going to have a serious worry about the bullpen if they're throwing four or five innings every night.
Well, yeah.
Can you comment on our catching this year? I think that's been a real surprise.
Well, I think it's been positive.
He's a big upgrade over Aaron Civia defensively, and he's hit fine. I think they had three scoreless outings by starters and three shutouts in their first 16 games. I think last year was 64 games or something before that happened. He's putting down the right fingers most of the time.
A little more speed on the bases would be nice, but catchers don't usually have that asset.
Hey, the one stolen base.
Well, yeah, we all know how that happened. I mean, he's got to hit it almost like they've got to remove the fence and let him hit it out into the parking lot to get a double. Like, almost. Like, was it last night he tonged one off the wall and barely got to first base in time?
But it's a small part of his job.
Oh, there's a stolen base if you're watching on TV.
He's
laughing when
he
his
hit
ass
the ground,
off.
He's smiling. You can't blame him. Look at
him. Well, the dugout gave him a standing O, too.
He deserves a standing O. Run, Big Daddy, run.
Look at this. That was funnier than hell. Elliot, always a pleasure. Thanks, pal.
Always a pleasure. Nice speaking with you, Butch.
Thank you.
Smell you soon. Bob Elliott of the Toronto Sun. We'll come back and Butch and I will chat a bit when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Prices like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Before the air, McCown and Carter in the smelly little studio here at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk. Carmelo Anthony has said he will opt out of the final year of his contract and test free agency this summer from the New York Knicks. There will be interest. Chicago Rockets, or the Houston Rockets, Chicago Bulls, and the Clippers, at least a few of the teams that would be interested in Carmelo Anthony. There's no doubt this guy, Butch, has talent. There is a question as to whether you can build a championship around him. And definitively, we have not seen him in a position, either with Denver or with the Knicks, to have a sufficient supporting cast to maximize what he could be. That's a real possibility. Or on the other hand, maybe he is a selfish player who needs the basketball and is really more interested in his own stats and his own paycheck than winning championships. Which do you think he is?
I don't think that he's worried about his paycheck or how many shots. He's been put in a position since Syracuse that the team's success was based off him having a certain efficiency scoring the basketball. The problem, I think, for Carmelo is on the highest level, people are concerned, will he be involved more on defense when you're playing that championship game the last 10 possessions of the game?
Well, we don't know. He hasn't been close to that.
I agree, but I think that with the right coach, the guy's in his 11th year, be his 12th year next year, What else is he playing for? The money's an automatic. So all he's really playing for is a ring and the status and history of doing very well at the end of the year instead of, you know, he's won a scoring title. He's been very effective. I think the saddest part for Carmelo Anthony was that he was not drafted by the Detroit Pistons. And that non-draft of Carmelo Anthony over a player that from Europe that was not very good was the biggest mistake, I think, for Joe Dumars in reflection and Carmelo Anthony as far as career.
Why do you think that impacted Carmelo?
He would have been with a championship team. He would have provided the offense that they needed. He would have been.
You think they were good enough at that point?
They were very good. And once they added Rashid, they were a beast. I think in the history of the NBA and on midseason trades, the effect of Rashid Wallace going to the Detroit Pistons lowered their defensive points scored against by 8 points. That's almost 10% of the points being scored against you in a regular season. And he would have been with Ben Wallace, Chauncey Billups. He would have grown to be a different kind of pro instead of ending up where he ended up. And, you know, we're gonna shoot the basketball 120 times a game and devalue what the playoff scenario is.
There are people who try and put him in the same category as LeBron and KD, that he's that kind of player.
Yeah, those people don't know much about basketball.
Well, no, he isn't that guy, is he?
No, he's not. Because LeBron can guard at least three positions. We know he can play power forward when they go small. He can guard small forwards, twos, and definitely backup one. So, you know, if they're making that kind of comment, they're truly misdirected.
Or they're a pal of his who don't and not facing the real reality here.
Agreed. You know, everybody likes who they like. That's probably one of it's been one of the positives of fantasy football, fantasy basketball, that not only do you just – it used to, in our day, Bob, you know, you had your home team. You loved your home team. You would never root for the Steelers if you were a Browns fan. Now with fantasy, you get one or two guys off the Browns, one or two guys off the Steelers. So,
well, I don't play fantasy. I would never draft anybody from the Steelers just on principle.
I understand that, but what it did, it opened up the mind of the next generation to.
Yeah, there's so many kids have multiple teams now,
right,
that they root for.
They love the league. They love the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. Of the three that I mentioned, Houston, Chicago, Clippers, where does he have the best chance of succeeding? I mean, the Clippers right now look like the best of those three teams, although the Rockets have pieces.
Well, I imagine the conversation has already been, Clippers have said, let's see how we end up in the playoffs. And then they'll make the decision, do we trade their star forward for Carmelo? I believe that CAA, which represents Carmelo, also represents the head coach of the Chicago Bulls. I know that
That's a big deal in the NBA, isn't it?
Well, that's what they're going to sell. You know, it's like Stephen Smith. Stephen Smith sells a relationship,
yeah,
right? Where I can talk to guys you can't talk to.
Right.
And that allows me to have a stronger opinion because I can go talk to these guys. So I think that he wants to go through the recruiting process. That's always a dangerous because you don't, you know, really you need to put a ring on it, you know, and the Knicks aren't going to be allowed to put a ring on it. They're going to let him go out to the party and let other guys look at their favorite girl, and that's always dangerous. And the issue is, does he really want a basketball decision, or does he want leverage? Mm. Because it's not about money. The contract is going to be the contract.
If you were the general manager of the Raptors, if you were if you're in a position of power, would you look at this guy? Would you take a run at him?
No. I would not spend $135
on this guy.
At this stage in his career,
on this guy,
with the minutes he's played, especially the last 2 years, I wouldn't do it. I think he's a really good guy, but for Toronto's market, it's not right.
We got to get out of here. We got a roundtable for you tomorrow. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening tonight. See you in 24 hours on Primetime.